I crave a cup, a bowl, a mug of your heart's steel, unsheathed before by mortal or god, for rage or lust of things, both unneeded and forever unreal. This is the quintessence and the dust. Dreams do not stand before you and call the blade. Dreams do not walk or breathe or love you as I do, or can, or will if given just a moment's shade from the moon of pain and the stars that lie. My words shall be eternal, syntax monuments of you. Beneath the tread of centuries, stone shall fall, paint peel, music rise to ears long deaf. But now, and from this night on, you are immortal. That poem, entitled Monument, is one of several pieces I wrote to a rather remarkable young woman who became the first of my major muses. Her name was Nancy, and I met her when I was attending Morgantown High School in Morgantown, West Virginia. I was a senior, she was a junior, and we shared an elective English class called Science Fiction and Mythology. We were friendly acquaintances for the entirety of the year, and it was only after the school year had run its course that I made any attempt to socially approach her. She was bright, clever. She could swear like a sailor. And I fell hard for her. We were together over 5 years, five of the better years of my life, until complex forces pulled us apart. But if you take a look at the works that were generated during that period of time, you see a remarkable set of excellent works. Monument, The Unicorns, Tread Softly, I Should Have Been Immortal, Psyche Has Not Time for Failure, Warrensburg Farewell, Threnody for Times Now Past, and the list goes on and on into infinity, practically. There are major poets whose entire body of work does not reach the level of works or intensity of the works that were generated in that relationship. I think in many ways she was the prototype for the muses. And I have seen, as time has gone on, and I've worked on the concept of abstra, my abstraction of the perfect woman, the perfect muse, how more and more the mantle of abstra looks remarkably like Nancy. In my works, she carries three faces. One is that of the Electric Lady, or My Electric Lady. That image was originally created by a t-shirt she used to wear. It was a dark blue t-shirt with a light blue image of an Oriental lady holding a parasol. The blue was kind of an electric blue, that of the image, and we referred to it sometimes as the Electric Lady shirt. She looked great in it. And for some reason or other, that phrase stuck with me, so that even early on in our relationship, I wrote a poem entitled My Electric Lady, which was about perhaps the inevitability of our splitting. Here is that poem. Dance for me, my electric lady. Sing a song that gently soothes my soul. Tomorrow, I must leave your world again, my love, as I strive to reach this endless journey's goal. I once gave up my poor and mortal birthright so that I might touch the sky and see true things. My love, I'm not so sure I would have started if I could have seen the pain this voyage brings. Once again, my electric lady. Touch me and bring forth my too rare smile. For the moment, I am just another mortal, and a little love will last me quite a while. If we had only met before the present, and what is gone had made me what I am, a love would be that all who live might envy. But I cannot come back this way again. For the final time, my electric lady, give me all that I may take within my vow. Tomorrow is my child, and a gift to the stars, and the night is just my brother, here and now. You see, originating in that poem, themes that would resonate through the next several decades of my work. The whole concept of choosing between the path of the poet and the path of love emerged for the very first time in this work, written on a typewriter, in her study, in her house on South High Street, as she sat on the sofa and studied. It came out of me, like so many of my works do, just spontaneously, without any real conscious thought. And it was incredibly emotional for me when I sat down and read it. Now, another poem that brings out another of her identities is Nemacorn. And what is a Nemacorn, you might ask? Well, a Nemacorn, it's a word I coined, just as I coined Theocracide, which would be the basis of the poem Theocracide at Mach 10E6, which is about actually the death of her mother, 8 years after we separated. The opening line of that poem, "By grief is the shadow granted substance, in pain is the sinner reborn saint," became practically a mantra for me, getting through difficult times. The ennobling power of emotional turmoil and pain, because you learn what you're made of in those times. But anyway, getting back to the Nemacorn, I love to coin words. Nemacorn is a contraction of neminem, Latin for no man or nobody, or nothing, and unicorn. To me, a physical representation of a Nemacorn would be a black unicorn with a silver horn. But in my definition, a Nemacorn is anybody or anything that you love so much, so intensely, that it takes on mythic proportions in your mind. And that is so true with so much of my works. And so at the time that I coined that phrase, which was just after that concept, that word, which was just after we had broken up, and I was consumed by guilt and grief over the breakup and my part in it, I wrote a poem called Nemacorn. And here it is. And in my willful innocence, I slit the fragile throat of the dream heart, the Nemacorn that bore me to my Rubicon. Its blood, a shaft of crystal whispers, gave amortization to the feelings I feared and slew out of time now gone. The sniggering empaths capered no more, but lay in pain among the orchids, crippled by the Nemacorn's gentle acceptance of my treachery and butchery, that placid brain caring not for a vengeance of the visceral. Dreamheart knew that time would slay me, time and regret that would be mine, when my all-too-mortal form failed in the icy waters, when I found my strength was set against powers beyond me, when passion paled. And in my willful innocence, I slit the fragile throat of the dream heart, the Nemacorn that bore me to my Rubicon. Its blood, a shaft of crystal whispers, gave amortization to the feelings I feared and slew out of time now gone. Another very remarkable thing about that poem was the first use of the word amortization in my works, another word I had coined. The influences that Nancy, in her guises as the Electric Lady, the Nemacorn, and finally as Psyche, the influences are undeniable. She set the mold for the great muses. She was beautiful. She was brilliant. She wasn't afraid to argue. She wasn't afraid to debate with me on issues. To a large extent, my later in life conversion from conservative republicanism to liberal democrat finds its roots in discussions that she and I had. She was a powerful influence on me. I regret that I've not had contact with her now in probably close to 20 years. I know she's somewhere down south. And I wish her well. I hope she's aware of the success I've had as a writer, because that was one of the things that drove the nail into the coffin. She had accepted the role of trying to dissuade me from being a writer, because there's really no money in that. Well, there are more important things in life than money. And just about anybody who's worth a damn knows that, or has known that. I would say if you took probably the 20 greatest people who ever lived, put them in a room, there wouldn't be a single millionaire or billionaire in that room. And that's a value that I've learned from my writing. To create things that are immortal, syntax monuments of people and of myself and of my feelings and thoughts. And I owe the fact that I am who I am, that I write what I write, that people around the world are touched by what I say and think and feel and put to paper and internet, to this remarkable young woman. So wherever you are, Nancy, I hope you hear this, and I hope you realize just how important you are. Have a good evening.